Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Goldmine Edition. Today our featured guests are James Burling and Brandon Middleton from the Pacific Legal Foundation, discussing Kuralaska v. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, heard an oral argument on Monday, January 12th. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the regulation of leftover material created during the process of extracting gold, known as tailings. The case involves a dispute over a permit issued to petitioner Kuralaska by the Army Corps of Engineers, allowing petitioner to dam Lower Slate Lake and deposit the tailings from a nearby mine in the lake. The Corps issued this permit under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act, which grants it the authority to regulate the discharge of fill material. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council and two other groups appealed the Corps' decision, arguing that Kuralaska's tailings were instead prohibited by a 1982 EPA regulation under Section 402 of the Clean Water Act, which concerns the discharge of pollutants. Kuralaska and the State of Alaska filed a motion for summary judgment, which the District Court granted, but the Ninth Circuit reversed and invalidated the permit, relying on Sections 301 and 306 of the Act, to hold that the discharge was prohibited despite a 2002 joint regulation that classified the tailings as fill material. The Supreme Court now considers whether the Ninth Circuit erred in holding that the Corps does not exercise exclusive permitting authority over fill material under Section 404. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speakers. And now, our friends from the Pacific Legal Foundation.
This is Brandon Middleton, and I'm an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, and I'm here with PLF Principal Attorney Jim Burling, and we're going to discuss Kuralaska v. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and Jim will be discussing the factual circumstances of this case, and I'll be discussing the legal aspects and the recently held oral argument.
This case involves a proposed gold mine about 45 miles north of Juneau, Alaska, called the Kensington Gold Mine. This is a mine that actually operated from 1897 to 1928, and Kuralaska, the current owners, proposed to expand this mine and redevelop it. To do that, however, they need to get rid of a large amount of tailings. Mining can occur today in methods that allow very low-grade ore to be mined, but to have low-grade ore mined, you need to dispose of a great amount of tailings to do that. Tailings are the waste rock and sand and silt that are left over from the mining process once the gold is separated out from the rock. And these have to be disposed of in a tailings pond. That is the traditional way of disposing of tailings in a case of a large mine involving low-grade ore. Kuralaska has two choices before it. One, it could dispose of these tailings on dry land, or actually some wetlands, that would be a stack that would be very, very large and would be visible from miles and miles around, including visible from cruise ships and some of the local waterways near Juneau. The other alternative was to build a 50-foot dam behind a lake called Lower Slate Lake and put the tailings into the lake. The tailings would raise the bottom of the lake until the life of the mine was concluded, at which point a new lake would be created on top of the tailings pond, restocked with fish and things of that nature. There are uncertainties about the environmental impacts and the environmental efficacy of a new lake, whether it would really work. There are some issues with the high pH of the tailings, so on and so forth. But the idea here is that the tailings would be disposed into Lower Slate Lake behind this dam, and the level would be raised significantly, so the lake would be converted into a tailings pond and eventually back into a lake. By changing the nature of this particular wetland or this particular lake, the Corps of Engineers, Kuralaska, and the EPA agreed that it would be lawful for the tailing disposal to be put into the lake subject to the requirements of Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. That is a portion of the Clean Water Act that governs the disposal of dredge and fill materials into a water of the United States when it has the effect of raising or altering the waters of the United States, getting rid of the wetlands, for example, converting the lake into an upland, or in this case, converting it into a tailings pond and then back into a lake. Any waters or fluids leaving the dam area would be subject to the stringent environmental regulations of Section 402 of the Clean Water Act, dealing with effluent limitations. Those would have to be cleaned. They could not have any adverse impact on waters of the United States, fish and aquatic organisms. Naturally, anything in the lake itself would be killed by the tailings pond and the increase in the size of the lake and the tailings pond, and the fish would die until they were replanted at some point in time when the mining concluded and a new lake was going to be created. The issue here is that Southeast Alaska Environmental Council brought a lawsuit arguing that the tailings had to be subject to the more stringent effluent limitations at all times, and that this sort of permit thing that occurred here was not legal because it was a waste from an industrial process. And waste from an industrial process, says Southeast Alaska Environmental Council, must be stringent to very tough water quality standards, and by their very nature, tailings could not satisfy the effluent limitations. Tailings contain silt, sand, ground up rock, and it had a relatively high pH. And by definition, although they are not horribly poisonous, they're certainly not good for fish, and they would kill the fish as they were being smothered if for no other reason. And the Southeast Alaska Environmental Council thought that it was inappropriate for the dredge and fill regulations to be applied to this disposal of tailings. They thought instead that the more stringent effluent limitations should apply. Naturally, a practical consequence of the argument of the Southeast Alaska Environmental Council would be that this tailings disposal method would not be legal, could not be done, would not be possible, because there's no way that tailings could be permitted under the effluent standards under the Clean Water Act. You can't do it because by their very nature, tailings contain stuff that would pollute a body of water if it was not contained behind the dam. So the Southeast Alaska Environmental Council sued, and they succeeded before the Ninth Circuit, where the Ninth Circuit held that the permitting granted by the EPA and the Corps of Engineers did not comport with the Clean Water Act, and Core Alaska, the mining company, and the state of Alaska, which is involved in the permitting here, petitioned the United States Supreme Court for certiorari. The Supreme Court granted, and oral argument was on January 12th.
Now, the central legal issue in this case resulting from SEAC's lawsuit is to what extent a facially valid permit under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act absolves the need for a discharger to acquire an additional permit under Section 402 of the Act. Now, Section 404 grants the Army Corps of Engineers authority over the discharge of dredged or fill material into the navigable waters of the United States. The Army Corps in this case determined that the Kensington Mine tailings fell within the regulatory definition of fill material because they would have the effect of raising the bottom elevation of Lower Slate Lake. The Ninth Circuit, however, invalidated the permit on the basis that the tailings from Corps operations could not be discharged if they did not comply with Section 402's more restrictive permitting regime and the corresponding effluent restrictions under Section 306. The relevant Section 306 regulation states that there shall be no discharge of processed wastewater to navigable waters from mills that use the froth flotation process. And the Ninth Circuit held that this particular provision could not be superseded by a more general fill rule under Section 404. Despite the regulatory uncertainty and confusion between the Section 306 effluent restriction and the Section 404 fill rule, such a conflict would be of little consequence if Sections 404 and 402 were truly distinct. Now, to be clear, if the permitting scheme of Section 404 was completely separate from that of 402 and the corresponding effluent restrictions of 306, then a valid permit under 404 would absolve the need for a discharge such as that of Core Alaska's to comply with Section 306 effluent restrictions. SEAC argued that Sections 404 and 306 were in fact not in conflict, and that there is nothing within the Section 404 permitting scheme to exempt discharges of fill material from Section 306 effluent restrictions. SEAC further noted that Section 306 does not specifically exempt fill material from effluent restrictions, and that Section 404 itself has a long list of exceptions that does not include Section 306 restrictions. To paraphrase counsel for SEAC's response to a question from Justice Breyer at oral argument, the only way a discharge of fill material could be permitted solely under Section 404 was if it met the definition of fill material and there was no applicable effluent standard. Petitioner Korolaska, along with the U.S. government, argued that the Ninth Circuit's statutory analysis was flawed and that Section 306 effluent restrictions do not apply to any discharges of fill material permitted under Section 404. Both Korolaska and the government argued that the joint Army Corps EPA fill rule, as well as the regulatory history that treated fill material and effluent restrictions separately, provide ample evidence for permitting the Kensington mine tailings under Section 404 and not restricting them under Section 306. In addition, Pacific Legal Foundation, along with the Alaska Miners Association and the Alaska Forest Association, submitted an amicus curiae brief in support of the petitioners. Among other things, our brief sought to address the argument that Section 404 is not distinct from Sections 402 and 306 due to the lack of explicit exceptions in the latter provisions. To summarize our argument, the distinction between Section 404 and 402 is not set out by explicit exceptions, as that would render the understood 404-402 distinction irrelevant. The Clean Water Act is indeed a complex law, but one thing is clear when you examine the statute's provisions in relation to each other as well as the case law. Section 404 and 402, the permitting schemes within those sections, are distinct such that regulation of a discharge under one takes the discharge beyond the scope of regulation under another. Now, like any case before the court, both sides seek to sway the opinion of Justice Kennedy, and it is worth noting in this case that he at least seemed to be attuned to the 404-402 fill effluent distinction. Throughout oral argument, he questioned counsel as to whether a discharge could be both fill material and subject to an effluent restriction, and he seemed concerned that a discharge could be permitted under the fill rule and still be subject to Section 303 effluent restrictions. Justice Breyer also expressed his interest in what determines whether a pollutant is fill material under Section 404 or is an effluent and subject to 306 restrictions. His concern was that some of the worst materials in the world, which he proposed to be saturated fat and cholesterol, he suggested that they could come within the Section 404 definition simply because they filled the bottom of the lake. Justice Breyer seemed to be hinting at the environmental concerns of tailings, and counsel for Korolaska pointed out that if the worst material does not meet the strict EPA guidelines within Section 404, it may not be permitted under that section, even if it does fill up the level of a lake. While there is no way to tell how the court will rule in this case, it will be interesting to see how the court addresses the fill effluent distinction, especially if the Ninth Circuit decision to invalidate Corps' 404 permit is indeed upheld.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.